Good morning. You made it. Yay. Let's open up our morning in a word of prayer real quick. Dear God, I thank you for the rain, Lord. What a nice change of season and mood and vibe just as we transition into colder months, Lord. Thank you that everyone here got here safe. If anyone's on their way, Lord, please keep them safe. I just thank you for this room, Lord. It is such a beautiful community, Lord, that you have just woven together so perfectly. I'm just so grateful to be a part of it. And thank you for everyone and their efforts to make it happen every Tuesday. Thank you for those that prepared the food, Lord. And thank you for Dane Sanders, who's going to be speaking today, Lord. Give us ears to hear him, Lord, and use him for your good. In your name, amen. So this morning I text Taryn. I was like, hey, sorry to do this last minute. Can I introduce Dane? Is that okay? And Taryn was so nice. Where is Taryn? I'm like looking for her. And she's not here, so it's really good I'm doing it. Anyways, so I'm going to go ahead and introduce Dane and then explain some other fun facts about him. So Dane Sanders has served on staffs at both Westmont College, Biola University, Rock Harbor Church, and Alpha. These days, he leads employee development and performance at Common Thread Collective, a digital marketing company here in town. Dane also leads Men and Women of Discomfort, a community of people who volunteer to make their lives more uncomfortable. So that was step one, the yoga or whatever. Step two, talk to Dane. Dane and his wife, Tammy, everyone knows Tammy, have been a part of Grace Fellowship since 2020, and they have four adulting kids and make their home in Costa Mesa. His Mad Lib is always, I haven't read this till just now, always forgive your husband for not putting the toilet seat down. Remember he was a child once too. Oh my gosh, this is all directed. Never underestimate a dad's love for his daughters. Don't forget that terrible camping trips age really well. I like that. And then sometimes problems really do just take care of themselves. Ah, let it roll off your back. That's so good. So in addition to that, I wanted to share just a fun fact about Dan. Who was a part of Blessing last year? Raise your hand. So like a lot of the room. Does anyone remember Dane on our panel with Mentor Moms and Husbands? It was so good. And at times awkward as the host of it. So I asked some question having to do with balance, and I was ready for some wonderful wise answer. And I got a wise answer. It was just not the one I was expecting. So Dane responds, he goes, well, first of all, this whole concept of balance is just ridiculous. Right away, you put two things at odds with each other. He said it much better than I'm saying now, but it was so mind-blowing to me that I was like, he's so right, because I'm kind of obsessed with balance. Yeah, you want everything to feel good, whatever. And when he said that, it struck me and it stuck with me, and it was really hard to like keep that question going on the panel. It's like, all right, well, don't know where to go from there. But I think literally that day, I text Abby and Jenny, and I was like, I think our theme should be something along these lines, something about being all in, something about being wholehearted. So anyways, our theme for the year, wholeheartedly, Colossians 3:23, should definitely be more sure on that, is actually inspired from our speaker today. So he's going to be speaking on that. So anyways, just wanted to share that, how it's kind of full circle. And thank you for inspiring our theme. So everyone, give it up for Dane Sanders.
All right. So, before I get started, I need to acknowledge a couple things. First of all, I am, you get this every time, right? When dudes come here, I'm just outnumbered, and it's, y'all are terrifying. Second, the things I'm going to talk about today aren't things that I understand like you understand. They're things that I'm going to be pointing at that you actually have far more authority on than I do. And that'll make itself evident in just a few minutes. These are outside of my experience. I don't know what it's like to be in your shoes. I do know what it's like to be next to your shoes with my wife, but it's really not the same. And I just want to acknowledge that on the front end. Watching my widowed single mom raise my two older brothers and me was rough. And I can't imagine what it was like for my mom. I sat ringside with my wife navigating birthing and mothering four kids under six. And all are amazing adults right now. I don't totally know how that happened, but I do give credit to Tammy, and I honestly don't know how she did it. I don't know how you all do it. Well, I don't know how you guys got from the parking lot, actually. It's funny. I went out with this noble, like, hero's moment of, like, I'm going to, like, help people get in. And I just saw woman after woman be like, with 17 things, like, what are you talking about? This is just Tuesday. This is what we do. I did have some challenges being a dad, but that really is not the topic for today, and nor is it relevant to the unique discomforts, and that word discomfort is important, the unique discomforts imposed on you ladies. And then finally, I want to share a story. So I was recently on a visit to Canada to visit my 85-year-old mom, and right next to where she lives, there's this Catholic monastery. And as we were walking around the grounds together, it was really a sweet time, and we come across this, like, huge shrine to what I assumed was Mary. You know, Catholics, Mary, like, they got a thing. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And some was walking by who was connected to the place. And I said, oh, tell me about this shrine to Mary. He goes, oh, no. This is Augustine House. I'm like, oh, okay, St. Augustine. That's cool. What's the shrine about? And he said, well, it's to St. Augustine's mom. I'm like, well, that's interesting. I've never heard of this before. What does it mean? Well, apparently, St. Augustine was a scoundrel. And especially through early adulthood, and the shrine was there to honor his mom for praying him into the kingdom. So, thought of my own mom, who no doubt prayed for this scoundrel, and I'm now thinking of the beautiful babies that you all have who may soon enough be scoundrels too, and how you will pray, and you all are saints. So all this to say, being a mom is by definition uncomfortable. But I want to get more specific than that. Let's talk about pregnancy for a second. Again, nothing I understand, just adjacent to. Morning sickness, stolen sleep, appetite turned traitor, involuntary body transformation, fluids that most men don't know exist. Healthcare hurdles, isolation, and fear of the unknown. Then there's the first-time new mom, crash course in survival, a marathon of sleep deprivation, breastfeeding battles, anxiety and worry and loneliness, self-care sacrifice, imposter syndrome, unavoidable guilt. And then throw in multi-kids, chaos, divided identity, exhaustion, constant interruptions, competing needs, divided attention. Bone deep fatigue, self becomes invisible, constant logistical firefighting, zero privacy, emotional tsunamis, theirs and yours. So that is the backdrop. That is the backdrop for these verses from Isaiah. Now we're going to make a quick turn here, and it's on purpose, but I want you to hang with me on these verses. And this, for context, this is a chapter in Isaiah in the Old Testament where the prophet Isaiah is actually talking about Jesus in advance of Jesus showing up. And this is what Isaiah wrote. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. This is Jesus he's talking about. Jesus is going to proclaim good news to the poor. He, the Father, has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, and release the prisoners from darkness. To proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort him comforting us, to comfort all who mourn, to provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. And there's more I'm going to read about this passage in a minute, but I just want to pause there for a second and just acknowledge, again, Isaiah is talking about the coming of Jesus and what Jesus will do and does do. But he's also foreshadowing Christ's call to us as disciples, Christ's call to you as a disciple. And a lot of this, 2 weeks ago when Dave spoke an amazing talk, he said, by the way, if you're going to invite outside speakers, put Dave last. It really would be helpful. Isaiah is foreshadowing that it's actually our job in Christ and Christ in us to bind up broken hearts, to proclaim freedom for captives and release prisoners from darkness. But this is troubling on several levels for me, because I'm not very good at these things. How am I supposed to become the kind of person who can do these things, especially when I feel brokenhearted and I feel like a captive and I feel like I'm in the dark? Or I might say some of you, depending on the day. So as I prepared for this talk, my best sense was that the Spirit was telling me that the brokenhearted captives and prisoners, the ones who are mourning, grieving, sitting in ashes and despairing, they are those who are unknowing victims of two fundamental forces in the universe. And today is the perfect day to describe these forces. These are things that are common to the human experience. Everyone experiences them, some more than others, especially if you drive an SUV and you're in our parking lot today. So the first two things are the drift and the whirlwind. So let me just describe what I mean by this. The drift is the phenomenon that we are all batteries that are leaking energy all the time. If we've slept, and that's a big if, we wake up refreshed. But after a long day, we've drifted to exhaustion. This is the law of entropy. We all know this. I have a hot cup of coffee. What do we all know about this cup of coffee in 10 minutes? It's cold. It's just what happens. It's so common. It's tempting to think it's not common. Like, no, what's normal is the full battery. No, what's normal is the empty battery. That's what's happening. It's always degrading. And if we don't acknowledge that as a fundamental law of the universe, we put ourselves in a tough spot. And I'll show you why in a minute. So that's the first thing is to acknowledge. The drift is, it exists, it's always happening, it's always taking. And while that's happening, we have one job. And that's to swim against the drift. So like picture like you're at, you get in the water at Newport Beach and you wade in and you're like, oh, I'm at the pier, this is great. And you blink and what pier are you at? Like 40, like the drift has taken you places you didn't intend on going, not because you were actively involved, it's just the drift took you there. And this is happening all the time. Just be conscious of that. So that's phenomenon number one. Phenomenon number two is the whirlwind. So if the drift is below the surface of the water, above the surface of the water is what you all woke up to this morning. It's a storm. This is happening all the time. Jesus warned us about storms. There will be trouble, he would say. And why would we pretend otherwise? Well, we live in Southern California. We think what's normal is sunny and 72. But it's not normal. It's just where we live in a weird spot. This is normal. Sunny and warm is abnormal. And we should be grateful for sunny and warm. Sunny and warm is amazing. But don't pretend that the storms aren't normal. The storms are always coming. And this is why there's specific warnings and encouragements, and actually it's more than encouragement, it's like a command. Get ready for the storm. We ought to build our lives in such a way that anticipates them. Build your life upon the rock, Scripture tells us, not the sand. But the sand is precisely what most of us build our lives on. And in our culture, and this is to Kelsey's point and my irreverent comment at that perilous day when it put me on the hook for the most terrifying talk I've given in my life. That is the mythical pursuit of balance, is my belief. So with the drift, with the whirlwind, when we put our life on a balance, it becomes problematic. And I want to be more specific about what that means. So when people say they want balance, let's get real about what that actually means. they're not talking about balance. What they're talking about is they really mean they want comfort. More specifically, they want to be comforted. We know this because if I ask anybody in the world who tells me they really want balance, they're desperate for balance, if I was just balanced, everything would be awesome. They never once ever say, what I mean by that is my life is so serene, I'd like more chaos. Nobody ever says that. They want relief. They want a break. They're desperate. And again, the people in this room understand this more than me. So when they say they want comfort so they can feel relief through the road of balance, we just call this pursuit of comfort or balance like it's normal. It's actually, I think it's an idol of our age. I think if you go shopping, can you think of a single thing that's sold to you that isn't sold that is comfortable, convenient, easy, quick, cheap, Like, give me another synonym for the same idea over and over and over again. And even when you have a conversation, you say something to someone, and you're like, oh, if you're comfortable, can we do this? I was terrified of coming here and saying what I'm about to say to you all, because I was afraid you'd feel uncomfortable. So I decided to feel terribly uncomfortable all last night instead. So this idea that we imagine that if we could just get the ratio right, work and rest, discipline and joy, life would feel complete. But while our eyes scan the horizon for that perfect equilibrium, cheap comforts whisper at our feet. They're lies. They don't deliver. Now again, I'll say more about that in a second, but my wife will tell you, I love comfort. Like, I don't just like comfort, I adore. You should see my puffy collection of jackets. Like, I really like comfort. It's almost as big as my wife's Birkenstock collection. But what I'm talking about is being comforted is distinct from me trying to comfort myself. They're very different things. And again, we'll get to that right now. So while our eyes scan the horizon for all this perfect stuff, the promise of relief without effort, a shortcut to satisfaction, these are slowly dulling our hunger for the real prize. So the question becomes, what is the real prize as followers of Jesus? And that's to actually become like Jesus, to actually be the kinds of people who can stand up in storms, the kinds of people who get ready for the drift, and are actually the people that others lean on because they did work in advance of the moment, not in their own strength, but certainly in cooperation with Christ. And I think that there's a lot to consider here on a very individual level. Like right now, I'm talking out loud, and you're kind of hearing what I'm saying, but mostly what's going on is you're having a conversation with yourself about what I'm saying, or maybe a conversation with your conscience or the Holy Spirit or something. And it's that conversation that I really want you to tune into, because there's something stirring there that if this is as I think it is, the stuff we're talking about, it will reveal for you what's particular to you. And I hope it does. So comforting ourselves is at the heart of what most people mean when they say they want balance. Balance is often choosing a life of comfort on my own terms. Worst of all, when I comfort myself, I'm missing out on being comforted by the Lord. I miss the real thing, the real satisfaction, the authentic blessing. So if today's topic is about the lie of balance, my hope, before I'm done, is to compel a few of you to trade in that lie in exchange for the true blessing of wholeheartedness, which I know is the theme for the round, and also the stuff that I thought Dave did a great job of looking biblically, especially in the book of Colossians. Like, hang out in Colossians 3, 1 through 17. That one set of verses, those are verses worth memorizing. There's three specific sections. It's really worth some extra time, but you'll do that in about 10 years. So the means to do this is to build our lives on a foundation of what Jesus called taking up your cross and following him. And in my world, I just call this volunteering to be uncomfortable. Now, there's a difference between voluntary discomfort and involuntary discomfort. I'm not like a masochist. I'm not trying to hurt myself. What I'm saying is, in the midst of storms, doing things that are disciplined, think discipline to discipleship, those things actually help us to put us in a position where we can stand up in storms. And if we skip that bit, we don't get to show up the way we wish we would show up, the way our future selves wish we would. So the question becomes, why would anyone do this, volunteer for to be uncomfortable? Well, in doing this, you become something fundamentally different than the world we're living in. If you read the Sermon on the Mount and the things that Jesus talked about, the upside-down kingdom, you participate in that kingdom in such a way where different things come out of you because you did things in advance of those things. And it's not just self-helpy stuff. It's not what I'm talking about at all. Because it's the process, which we'll talk about in just a second, it undoes us in a way. It forces humility, not pride. It's not triumphant. It's actually puts us in a position of our consciousness of our weakness and our need for Christ. So later on in Isaiah, it says in that same passage, it says, this is no longer Jesus now. This is the people Jesus has influenced. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. They will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They will renew the ruined cities that have been devastated for generations. How does someone become an oak of righteousness? How do you get through your day where you don't just survive, but you're actually, you have something that you didn't have at the beginning, despite the drift, despite the storms? And I'm just going to read a flurry of verses that I want you to reconsider from this lens and see if they don't speak to you in a very unique way, if the Spirit doesn't speak to you. Hebrews 12:11. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Psalm 27. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart. Wait for the Lord. Waiting is very uncomfortable when what I have available to me can comfort me right now. If you look for me wholeheartedly, you will find me. I talk to people all the time. I get a chance to do this alpha thing where we get to meet with folks who have really good questions. And oftentimes they'll say, God doesn't show up in my life. And I'm like, are you looking? Like, I know you don't like your life, but are you actually looking wholeheartedly? Are you sold out in that pursuit? Philippians 2. Is there any encouragement from belonging to Christ? Any comfort from his love? Again, comfort from him. Any fellowship together in the Spirit? Are your hearts tender and compassionate? Then make me truly happy by agreeing wholeheartedly with each other, loving one another, and working together with one mind and purpose. Don't be selfish. I am selfish by default. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble. Thinking of others is better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. These are so counter to a pursuit of balance and comfort and relief. James 1, blessed is the one who persevered under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Romans 8, the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. Matthew 7, enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy. Again, great marketing. That leads to destruction. And those who enter by it are many, for the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life. And those who find it are few. Philippians 4, I have learned the secret to being content in every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, I do those difficult things through him who gives me strength. And then finally, this is the rock and the sand thing. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock, a wise woman. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and the beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. They got ready for the storm. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish woman or man who built his house on the sand, and the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. So you can imagine why this is a terrible thing to talk about to you people. I was raised by the single mom I mentioned earlier. I've sat ringside for almost 3 decades watching my wife voluntarily suffer as a mom and with me. And here I am, a dude, in this room, asking young moms to voluntarily sacrifice and suffer more than they already do on a daily basis. What a jerk. This is ridiculous. It's insensitive. I recognize that all of you already are in plenty of drifts and storms. But the reason I feel so convicted to share this idea is because I actually believe this path of voluntary discomfort, of discipline, of discipleship that's in your bodies, not just in your heads, is a means to become wholehearted. This is the path to get the good stuff. This is where the gold is. This is where you get discipleship to Jesus, personal flourishing, and actually you get to participate in redeeming the world. Redeeming the world. Like oaks of righteousness. Why? Because voluntary discomfort gives us strength while it gives us humility, while it unites us as a community. It wakes us up, it makes us stronger even in our weakness. Strength because it kicks against our victim status. The storm isn't just happening to us. The drift isn't just happening to us. We know these things are normal, and in God's kingdom, we have capacities that are often untapped. When we push back against the drift in the world, when we see ourselves as being able to do things we didn't know we could, we transform in our vision of who God made us to be. Some of you all have narratives about who you are that aren't true. How will you discover the more true story about yourself? By walking in this direction. Humility, because in volunteering to do the hard thing in an already difficult life, we quickly realize how small we are. This isn't standing on a hill like flexing. This is getting knee deep in the muck and the mire, and it's humbling, and it reminds us of how weak we are. Voluntary suffering makes it plain how desperately we need God. And then finally, unity. Unity because when you're in community of people who voluntarily suffer, you bond. Talk to any soldiers who come back from war or an athlete who comes back from a team competition. When you get beat up together, you unite. Look at this room. You know who your friends are in the foxhole. So what about discipleship to Jesus? I would argue that these are the orienting elements to bringing focus to your mentorship to Christ. This is exactly what Jesus modeled. Strength in the Father. Humility to the Father. Unity with the Father. We practice this and we become more like Jesus. And then that question becomes, well, what does this have to do with human flourishing? Okay, that's the right thing to do, but how will I actually flourish? Won't my life get worse if I do this? Actually, no, it gets better. It turns out an obsession with balance is a tyrannical way to live. This is what I was trying to suggest to Kelsey in that moment. It's torture. How do I keep all the balls spinning? How do I put these things that are seemingly really good against each other? Work and life balance. What are you talking about? Like, you're going to balance your kids? Like, you have two kids. Who gets the good stuff? They both do when you're wholehearted. There's this great little booklet that Tim Keller wrote called The Art of Self-Forgetfulness. Has anyone ever seen this little booklet? It's tiny. If you can find it, read it every year. It's such a gift. And he basically makes the case that flourishing cannot happen when you're fixated on you. It's just not available. That will only lead to vain efforts of self-sufficiency, self-comforting, self-balancing when we're craving God dependency. That's what our souls desire. So people who live like this aren't balanced. They show up in every scene they enter having something to give, more than take. These people actually have something to offer, a world in need. They have the ability to bind up broken hearts, to proclaim freedom, and to release people from personal prisons. And the common denominator to all these activities are people forgetting themselves long enough, not worrying about being balanced, and instead wholeheartedly choosing the hard thing. And by the way, I had this burden thinking, like, I need to, like, list all of the examples of what things could be. And that was, I realized quickly, a fool's errand. You already know the answer to the test. Like, the thing that you're thinking about right now, and it'll come up a little in the table questions too, that's the thing that's particular to you. It's not me saying you should go do X, Y, or Z. You know the answer. You know the uncomfortable thing in your life that keeps presenting itself, and it looks like a storm, or it looks like something that's going to take more than give, but you also know the promises that these things actually give more than they take, always, because you're not doing it alone. But make no mistake, it is hard to bind up hearts. It's hard to pay the price for people's freedoms. It's uncomfortable. You have to be a certain kind of person to do it, and you need to be the real deal. And then the question becomes, well, how do you become the real deal? Well, nobody got it from balance. Balance is homeostasis. It's finding and keeping the status quo. It's actually not changing. It's the goal to find nobody move. And somehow that's going to give you a life. Wholehearted does, though. Wholehearted isn't perfect. Far from it. It's a hot mess. It doesn't come all at once. It compounds over time. Most of the time, you're discouraged, wondering if you're doing anything right. But when you show up faithfully, you compound that over years, you get people like my wife. 29 years she's put up with me. yesterday we celebrated. And you all ruined it by making me give a talk this morning. Wholeheartedness doesn't come all at once. It compounds. You become wholehearted by practices you take on one day, 1 minute at a time. And this is the kicker. So what does this look like for moms? Well, here's some really, really good news. You already know. Your default setting is to choose voluntary discomfort for your kids. You suffer every day on behalf of someone else. And it's built in. You guys do not have this. We don't have it. I aspired to it someday, but I got to work it in. But you have it. But I'm not always so sure. You have it for your kids. I'm not always so sure you have it for you. And that's the thing I want to have linger in the air in your conversations today. I wonder what it would look like for you to voluntarily choose the uncomfortable thing that the Lord is stirring for you that would be for your own sake, that your future self would say thank you, that you did that hard thing, that you set me up to be this kind of person for Christ's sake. Thank you. So I don't know what I do now. What do I do? Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's great. And let it just hang for a second. If there's things, yes, in the back. Yes, please. Yeah, that's the right question. Yeah. So I kind of pointed this for a second at the beginning. I've been studying discomfort formally for over 5 years with this community that I run. And one of the biggest distinctions that we discovered is voluntary discomfort versus involuntary discomfort. The storms of life are involuntary discomfort. In fact, this whole thing started with me and my buddy Tim, this guy named Tim Kruger. Some people in town might know Jessica Kruger in town. She's an amazing woman. She has these two boys, Holt and Henry. But Tim and I, we were like middle-aged dad bods walking around Back Bay, malaise in life. We had great families, and we went to church, and we had a life. But we were all kind of like, huh, is this it? Like, is this really it? And we were kind of like desperate. So we started like experimenting, knucklehead, goofy dude guys things. So like cold water, breath holding, all the trendy things. And all carnivore diets. We'd go to like In-N-Out Burger and get 8 stacks of meat. It was so dumb. But we discovered there was kind of an enlivening that happened in our lives. It was like, oh, this feels like we're waking up. Like there's something going on here that's cool. And we looked like weirdos. Like weird. I would in front of our house, bless Tammy's heart. I would go out in front. And I'd sit on my front porch and I would do this like breathing regimen protocol thing so I could hold my breath. And she's like, the neighbors are watching you. Like, what are you doing? And anyways, we did all this stuff. And it was all really cool. And I thought, oh, this is it. We found the secret to life. And of course, it was superficial and light, and it was vain and all the silly things. And then, but then Tim got stomach cancer. And I watched him. When we first started, he was actually a really skeptical person. He actually went through Alpha, had an extraordinary coming back to the Lord, which was a whole story in and of itself. I'd love to share sometime. But what I watched him in his final year of life before he died, he was more alive than I'd ever seen. Like, I'd show up at his house, and I'm thinking, I got to go encourage my buddy who has cancer. And his body's betraying him, and it's terrible. And he had pre-purchased packages of communion stuff so that he could serve communion to anyone who came in the door. Like, that's how we showed up in life. It was extraordinary. And I was like, there's something here that we did not understand we had tapped into with this thing, this involuntary discomfort. He had an ability in that space to do something. And I talked to him about it, and there's no question. Like, he was unambiguous. This was the Lord's doing. It wasn't something he did. But he was very clear to say he was so glad he practiced voluntary discomfort before involuntary discomfort showed up in his life in such an extreme way. This is where I think you all have a very severe gift. It's a unique calling. That is very, it starts in the garden. it's like the Lord gave a curse that he wants to redeem. How does he redeem that curse? By you embracing it with him and walking toward the storm, especially when you don't want to, especially when you feel like you don't have anything left. And what I'm not calling for here is perfection. I'm not calling for like martyrdom. I'm not calling for like none of that. It's just, it's micro things, little things like that person cut me off and I'm angry and I'm going to choose to be unoffended right now. That person's insensitive. I can't believe he did that. Whatever the thing is. And it could be, like, again, more emotional. It could be physical. For me, embodied stuff is really helpful because I can be really heady. But I would experiment with these kinds of things and laugh a lot. Like, it's these are really experiments. But I think you'll find something that surprise you if you do. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes, Michelle. Yep.
I feel like the visual is so
helpful. So who gets a tattoo of their own logo? This guy does. So dumb. Again, do you do dumb things? But so for those of you who don't know, the bison or the American buffalo, they're one of the only animals. The only other one I could think of is the salmon. But the bison, I don't know the motivation for them apart from food, but the bison actually is the one animal that run, when the storm hits, they run toward it. Everyone else runs away. And there's a lot of theories around why this happens. One theory is that they're really smart because if you go towards the storm will pass faster. If you're running from the storm, it'll just keep following you like Pigpen everywhere you go. The other thing is the theory is that the storms get the vegetation all riled up, right? So as you are going towards the storm, you get the good stuff, all the gold, while everyone else is running away from the best stuff. And for me, when I understood these ideas just a little, and I've been getting to know it even more and more, I've just found this as a metaphor to be a helpful clue. You guys are too young to remember this. There's a TV show called Seinfeld. Anybody remember this show, Seinfeld? Yeah. So Seinfeld, there's a character named George Costanza, and George Costanza got to work for the New York Yankees. And George Costanza was a terrible human being on every level, except he found out one secret to life. Every time he had an inclination to do what he wanted to do by default, which was always a terrible thing, at the New York Yankees, he decided to do the exact opposite. And lo and behold, he became a vice president under George Steinbrenner in like 10 seconds. And this is the George Costanza model. The Buffalo model is everything is telling me to run away from that thing. That's probably the thing I get to go do. Like, it's just perspective. Like, there's this great little proverb, and I'm going to switch it a little bit because I usually tell it in the male gender, but the female gender is two women were pushing rocks up a hill. One's pushing rocks, and the other's building a cathedral. It's the same hill. It's the same rocks. It's the same terrible experience, but one of them, the rocks feel different. One of them, it actually feels purposeful. The other, it feels like nihilism or like, what's the point? This is just another day. And this is what you all especially get to face every single day. Your rocks pushing up your hills, whatever those are, how you relate with it. It's not about the rock. It's about how you're relating with it. So in our community, we talk about that. You've heard this, the distinction between get to and have to. Do I have to go do this again? No, you actually get to. And this is how the Lord will actually redeem the curse. When we see it as a call and we participate with it, because it has this transformative impact on who we are becoming. Thanks for that question, Michelle. Yes, Kels? I'm scared already.
No, don't be. I love that proverb, just the perspective and the choosing of the value of the great Lord King. In your journey with Tim and since Tim, so like frivolous, what were some of the...
It's still pretty frivolous. Like there's a lot of fun, but go ahead. Yeah.
What are some of the like mind battle self control things? Because you mentioned how we all can like have a narrative. What are some of the tactics you had to have better self control over the lens you choose to have to? Because taking care of kids is like,
Yeah. So one distinction that's helpful for me is the distinction between an operating system. Hang with me for a second. And an application. So your phone runs on an operating system. Like if there's no operating system, none of your apps work, right? But on the app level, which is kind of one level lower or higher, however you want to look at it, it's competing for RAM, like for your attention, right? Hang with me. The reason I make that distinction is I believe that no matter your walk in life, whatever you're up against in the season you're in, everyone needs a systems level practice that is immovable regardless of circumstances in your life. It's because if it breaks, you don't have anything above. It doesn't. But when all of a sudden your daily practice competes with the apps or the projects or the whatever the urgency of the day, the fire drills that you're in, it breaks. So like I got in trouble one time. I was giving a talk and I said that my practice was more important than my relationship with God and my wife and my kids, and that's pretty offensive. But what I was saying was, my capacity to tether to the Lord through my embodied actions every single day determines my capacity to love, determines my capacity to give, determines my capacity to do anything. Most of the time, I get so much benefit from just the common gifts of the Lord, I don't even realize how tied in I am. The moment God stops thinking of us, we don't exist. Like we already are being held up like crazy. So in the midst of that being held up, when we also consciously tether in, it's like we get more, we have a greater capacity. And again, I can't overstate it. It's very humbling because I realize how incapacitated I really am on my own. But I experience, like I'm way less of a jerk than I used to be. And I really mean that. Like I'm still a jerk. I have high capacity for jerkness. But it's not as kind of defaulty as it used to be. I'm becoming someone new. This is what Jesus promised. But it doesn't come in a grand gesture. It comes in micro steps every single day. So I like to, especially in your guys' season, I would picture like 1 to 3 things max. Like minimal, viable habits that you do in your life that somehow put yourself in the right mindset, that you make the priority, no matter what, the immovable objects. Now, it doesn't have to happen at the same time every day. Like you can be flexible. I was stressed out about this talk. I called off a workout this morning because workouts are important for me. But I'm on the hook. I got to get it done today, later. And you find your little nooks and crannies to make it work. But again, minimal viable. Don't overdo it. You can build on it over time. You're not in a rush. But you need those pieces that remind you that you're in the Lord more than anything else. I don't mind, but it's just so dumb. Like when you hear my examples, you're going to be like, that is so stupid. Oh, okay, so I get up in the morning and I hold my breath. I have a cold shower every day. The cold showers, Eugene Peterson, the guy who wrote The Message, he lived up in Montana and he had this really cool lake that he lived on and before he passed away. And he would get up every morning and baptize himself again. He'd go down to the water and he'd baptize himself. I was in Toronto, Canada, and these little lakes above, and I went skinny dipping in the morning to baptize myself because I didn't want my shorts to get wet for the flight home. And no one was up in this cold water. Like, it was fine. There was nothing irresponsible or, you know. But I was like, I every time I get a chance to be around cold bodies of water and it's safe, it's really important for me to find a way to, like, do the thing I just don't want to do. Like, there's nothing that I like. By the way, quick side note on this. You all have, this is biological too. You all have in the back of your brains two substructures called the anterior mid-cingulate cortex. The anterior, you have two of them, right here and right here. They only grow, and you want them to grow. They only grow when you do the thing you don't want to do. So if all of a sudden I started like loving cold water, it would stop growing. It wouldn't work. So I have to find something else that's uncomfortable. So there's nothing sacred about cold water or holding your breath. Like I'll have to find new things later if those become fun. But they're not fun now, so they're perfect. So I would experiment with it. And I would want to say, too, like sometimes when I talk about this stuff, for me, I am such a cerebral person. I can live in my first talk that I ripped up last night. It was so ridiculous. Like, it was so off base. But in my head, I had made it up in my head, like, no, this is the thing I need to say. And Tammy looked at me very kindly and said, oh, honey, that you've missed the mark. For me and how I'm wired, how the Holy Spirit is talking to me, it's embodied. I have to get in my body or I just kind of drift in weird ways. So that's it's helpful for me. Other people are maybe wired differently and they need different things. Is that actually helpful? Like, what do you think about for you?
I don't know.
Oh, did you guys see that? I think she knew exactly what it was. And she went, I would like to be balanced, please. That does not sound very attractive to me. Whatever that was, you don't have to tell us, but whatever that was for you, and whatever flash, okay, well, it will before the end of the day. Whenever it shows up, I would definitely do something with it. Do something minimal. Just go in the direction. See what happens. Yeah, yeah.
You said your dad love was never underestimated, dad love for daughters, and I only have daughters, so I love for you.
Well, first of all, I have a son, too, bless his heart. and Tammy, I think, talked about Drew last week. Yeah, they're there. Look at them. I mean, this is so dumb. My dad died when I was three. My dad's dad died when my dad was three. So my biggest chore in life was, like, how does a guy who didn't have a dad, whose dad didn't have a dad, ever be a good dad? I'm a freaking awesome dad, but I'm not a great dad because of me. I'm bankrupt. I got nothing. And again, these humans, it's weird. Like Drew is really tough. He was our toughie, especially in high school. But our girls, man, they've been a dream from day one, and I don't understand it. I just take it as the redeeming love of God in my life. And I hesitate to say that because some of you have terrors that are little girls, and you don't now, but you will. And so I'm very sensitive to all these things. Like, one of my voluntary discomforts is I intermittent fast. We run a community where we're very sensitive to women in our community who suffer from disordered eating. So this is where these aren't universals, right? You got to be select here. I'll just say that for me and how I'm wired, my girls have been a gift from God to redeem things in my life that I didn't know I needed redeeming. Yes, ma'am.
Do you feel like you've seen, I'm just thinking about, like, our kids, you know, witnessing us choosing volunteers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what's terrible about parenting is it really is monkey see, monkey do. Like, everything I've told my kids, I don't think they remember any of it. And I thought it was going to make the difference if I just said it just right. This is my headiness. Most of what they get from us is what they see us do, right? So, and most of my family make fun of me for all the things that I do. But there's a principle underneath it where it shows up in each of their lives in very unique ways. Like, I'm very clear. Tammy will never join Men and Women of Discomfort ever because she lives it every day. Like, she doesn't need it. It's not for her. And she has her own thing. And I think about that for each of our kids. Like, the principles keep showing up in unique ways. I think God's speaking to them in really cool ways, inviting them to unique things. And I think I want to get the higher level principle and how it plays out in the particulars. That's up for grabs. But they all kind of rhyme. They all kind of sing together in unique ways. Like my daughter, Lisi, for whatever reason in this season, she is actually leaning more towards the embodied stuff, and it's really helpful for her. My son, he is a heady dude, and he can get in his head, and I can see the next decade for him of how the Lord will invite him more and more in to his own version of these things. So I would just say, like, practice something that they can see, because it'll be really helpful. And some of you, we're talking about, like, little kids, like, showing, where's my golfer? Taryn. Like, your 2.5-year-old, is that right? Watching you golf, like, you just sign him up for the pros. Like, you're all set. Like, there's just a sense of, like, it's not about golf. It's about being with each other as you're getting into the thing. Going once, going twice. Thank you guys so much for the privilege. Really mean it. Thank you.